It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Week. All week long on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we are exploring artistic Iowa. And this hour, we're going to shine the spotlight on the organizations that give all of us an opportunity to experience and create art. We'll talk about community art centers, community bands, community theater, and we want to hear from you. Is there a community arts organization in your town that means a lot to you or that you feel has really made a difference in your community? Be a part of the conversation. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to start this hour in Maquoketa, Iowa, which is a town shaped in recent years by a strong artistic movement. Rose Franson is here with us. She's one of the major catalysts of this movement. She's the creator of Portrait of Maquoketa, a huge mural painted on 34 vertical panels that features the beautiful landscape of Maquoketa, and on the back of those panels, the faces of 180 residents of Maquoketa. The work has been showcased at the Smithsonian's National Portrait Gallery. It's owned by the Figge Museum in Davenport now, where it will be on display starting October 2nd. Rose, hello.
Hi there, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Now, I know that you are an Iowan by birth and an artist for a very long time. When you moved back to Iowa, when you moved to Maquoketa, what kind of an artistic community did you find there?
Well, not much of one. When I moved back to Maquoketa, there was a guy whose daughter, I graduated with his daughter, who had a wildlife art gallery in town. They moved in when I was 13, so he was still going when I came back after going to art school and living in Chicago for a while. And it was you would find his prints. He's pretty much sold prints, and you would find his prints in different places, like at the bank or in people's homes. They would have a Costello print. And so there was, maybe that was a sort of a encouragement that it was possible to own a gallery in Maquoketa, you know, at that time. That, you know, and also I was young and my work wasn't very expensive, and you could imagine selling paintings just about anywhere when they were really reasonably priced. So we started our gallery.
You and your husband, who's also an
artist. No,
oh,
I actually started my gallery with my parents.
Oh, okay.
I didn't get married for another 10 or 12 years. So yeah, it was a long time before I met the guy.
Okay. So as you developed as an artist in Maquoketa, and of course, you know, became better and better known outside of Maquoketa, how did the artistic community begin to grow?
So I somewhat feel like the community of Maquoketa kind of grew with me. So I knew so much, this little bit about painting when I was first back and I was painting. And every year I would experiment and try something new and keep trying to grow. And it was as if that new work, people didn't quite know what to do with it. And then by a year later, when I was trying something else new, they would find the work that from the year prior to be interesting. So it was as almost as if they were growing with me, and people would come in, and we would have big openings, and it would actually get totally filled. There would be 100 or more people in an opening in a little gallery in Maquoketa, which was quite wonderful. And I don't know. So it just kind of kept, people just kept growing, and I was having a lot of national success. I mean, I was out there in the rest of the country doing well, and so I think people, that actually made people show up at our gallery doors more often too.
People started to really notice, and also I'm sure that brought a lot of credibility to the idea of being an artist in this town.
That's right. You could be an artist in town. And I used to paint. I would paint all over town, so people would actually not only come and see the paintings hanging on the walls, but they would see the work being made. And it would be maybe their house, or it would maybe be them at the sales barn, because I used to paint at the sales barns. So it sort of That was a little bit different from the guy that was here, Pat Costello. He didn't paint like that out on location. He just did paintings in his studio, and then they showed up in his gallery. But I was all over the place riding my bike and doing paintings, and you kind of it was sort of as if I was bringing it to the community in that way, too.
Right. Well, and I'm sure, although you're so incredibly gifted, when people see you paint, they think, well, maybe I could do that, too.
That's true. Absolutely. I would have kids watching, and kids would hang out with me, and I would let them scrape my palette and stuff. And I really felt that what I was contributing, I really saw that was what I didn't have when I was growing up in Maquoketa, that you could actually grow up and be an artist. That there was this lady doing it, and this was her job, you know. So I was hoping to kind of plant those seeds, and when kids would come up to me and say, oh, I really like art, I really want to, and I was like, you can grow up and do it. You can be an artist, you know. So I think that was cool. You know, that was a kind of an underlying contributing factor, too.
Definitely. So, as I said, I mean, you were really one of the major catalysts of this movement. But let's talk about what it has become.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Maquoketa Art Experience is a nonprofit that was established in 2008 that has its fingers in a lot of different things, in arts education and giving people access to the arts. Tell me about what's going on now.
So when we started, we were on a small storefront on Main Street, and now we've moved into a much larger, it's 5 storefronts, and we show work from regional artists, from all types of art. So we will have our local quilters and our regional quilters. We will have paintings. We will have anything, wood carvers. We'll have sculptors. We show all of that. We also have all the artists that do have a show. This is why we called it the Maquoketa Art Experience. We have them talk about their work, or even demonstrate. So we bring – that's kind of what I was – when I was out there with the kids and I was painting in front of them. We bring the art to people in a practice way. So we have – that's why – to have the artists talk about it, to make it more accessible so it becomes – you know, not just these objects on the wall that are somewhat distant. So we have that, and then we also are having musical performances. We have open mic nights. We have writing workshops. We have, we thought that this place would be all arts. You know, we're exploring all arts and letting people come in and sort of bring their talents and also their questions to Main Street.
And Maquoketa itself has seen a lot of benefits from this artistic renaissance or artistic birth, I guess, in the community. And I know that you haven't done it all alone. There are really tremendous patrons of the arts in Maquoketa and people who have seen what it can do for the community. What do you think they were seeing that made so many people realize this is something we need to be investing our time, our money, and energy into?
Well, I think what Portrait Maquoketa did when that project went national, when it went to the Smithsonian, I think it made people realize that big things can come from a small place, and that things can go much further. And I think that you can sort of develop some sort of sense of possibility, some ability to dream, some sense of pride, some sense of this is what our community is, this is what we look like to ourselves. I think that having that in starting to fill in the psyche has people look and say, hey, what else can we do? And what does just making something like intangible tangible, what does that, I think when you start experiencing that, I think you say, well, now what can we make? I mean, our town was actually, there's a bunch of people who believe that the renaissance of a community comes through the arts, through community centers like the YMCA, through the Interpretive Center, which we built, the Onward Fine Arts Center, which is a big auditorium that the community built together. I think that was a really instrumental thing in also building our community relationship and enjoying the arts and finding significance in having an art thing, because the community built the Onward Fine Arts Center together. It was actually hands-on, people down there working night after night after night, and I think that really created another sense of community and what's possible when we make something, you know.
Now, when you return, when you return to Maquoketa, Rose, of course, you brought with you new perspective and the eyes of an outsider.
Yes.
And how do you see the community change? How has it changed in the time that you've been back?
Well, so that's a little bit of a tough question. Well, partly because I don't think I saw actually what happened to Maquoketa when it was starting to lose what I think a lot of communities all over the Midwest and all over these small towns, when they started to lose the cohesiveness that they had because young people were no longer farming, people were no longer sticking around. I mean, I left at the same time when everybody else left, and I didn't see sort of that slow degradation happen. I just kind of walked back into it. And what I feel like I've seen after that, I mean, in that thing, is that people are trying to reinvent themselves. Our community is trying to reinvent themselves into this was what we were. We were this community. We had a large factory that supported people. We had a large farming community where the farmers were actually on the land and not just collective farms. But that's no longer here. And our young people are no longer here. So what do we do to make the people that are here feel like they want to stay or feel like this community gives them a sense of this is okay, this is actually a wonderful place to live, with so many options of other places that you could live, that this is actually things here.
So it sounds like this investment in the arts, this artistic movement, has strengthened the heart of Maquoketa.
I think so. I think that's a beautiful way to put it. Yeah. Well, and the ability to dream too, maybe, you know.
Rose, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You bet. All right. Nice to hear. Thanks for asking about our town.
Rose Franson of Maquoketa, Iowa. She is most famous for being the creator of Portrait of Maquoketa. And Portrait of Maquoketa, which has shown around the country and was recently in Des Moines at the State Historical Museum, has been purchased by the Figge Museum in Davenport, where it will be on display starting on October 2nd. We're going to continue our conversation about community arts in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are exploring community art. This is part of Iowa Week, and all week long on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we've been talking about different aspects of artistic Iowa. This hour, we're focusing on the organizations that give all of us an opportunity to maybe create art, be a part of the performance arts, at least get exposure to different arts. These are organizations that make our communities stronger. At least that's what a lot of people involved in these initiatives would argue. And Maura Pilcher is director of the Grantwood Art Colony in Iowa City. She's done a great deal of research on community art initiatives. Maura, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And when I talk about community art, I've mentioned a few different kinds, but can you paint a picture of some of the different kinds of organizations, different opportunities that you see cropping up in towns around Iowa?
Absolutely. The Grantwood Art Colony is actually part of the University of Iowa, and we're in the Office of Outreach and Engagement, which means our programs are spread out all across the state. And we are in charge of partnering communities with staff, faculty, and students. So what that means is that we hear what the community wants, and then we try to answer those needs. And one of the predominant wants we hear is to have arts in their communities. People value the placemaking that the arts can provide. And it, just as we heard from Rose, that, you know, it gives hope and interest in staying in your community. And they see that happening. And so what we turn around and do is we try to use our resources to make that happen. And it is across the state, small and large towns. Everybody seems to be wanting it right now.
Well, and in a few minutes, we're going to talk to people involved in different organizations around the state. Some of them very old organizations, 50 years or so. So I mean, obviously this is something that's been happening for a very long time. One of the organizations we'll be talking about is more than 100 years old. But, you know, Rose was alluding to the economic downturn of the 1980s, which was so hard on so many communities in Iowa. And I'm sure at that point, community arts was about the last thing on anybody's list of priorities. Now, as small towns have dealt with the reality of the 21st century, so you're seeing a lot more communities saying, no, this is something we have to have in our community.
Absolutely. All the studies are showing that people in their 20s and 30s are looking for a place to live and then finding a job, which is very different from how a lot of us came up into the workforce. And so a lot of that idea, it comes from when you come to a place and you get a sense of something special. And that sense of something special isn't necessarily the factory job or the parking lot or the shopping mall. It's those extra aspects of a community that makes it something different than the next community down the highway. And those are the arts and culture that they have to provide. And also those opportunities to get involved. That's one of those special things about Iowa and small town Iowa, is that you don't have to be a professional actor to get involved in community theater, that you don't have to be the best singer to be in the choir. And you can, you know, if you played trumpet in high school, you can get involved with municipal band. And that's kind of that's what people are looking for. And communities are recognizing that that's a benefit.
So it gives people an opportunity to come together,
mm-hmm.
to do something together, which is a very powerful thing. It gives people, I guess, a place to go on a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon, that kind of thing, which is also a pretty powerful thing. What else is there? I mean, what is it about the experience of art that makes this such a powerful experience?
I think I'd still go back to the how unique it is, that it's so specific to the identity of a community. We traveled across the state last year and met with a bunch of different communities, and each one of them wanted to do an art fair or do a music fest. And we tried to remind them to look at what their specific community had to offer. Is it a certain landscape? Is it a certain, you know, band or something like that they can take and capture and say, this is what we're going to champion and get behind? And then that you get that sense of pride behind that in a community. The other thing is that you were mentioning how some of these organizations have been around for over 100 years. And that there are renaissances happening. Another part of my background is in preservation. And one of the ideas we see across the state is people taking on these old opera houses, taking on the old Odd Fellows Halls that have been vacant, dilapidated for decades, and saying, you know what? This is an opportunity. We can make this a community center. People do need something to do on Friday nights. We need a place to put on our dance recitals. And so let's start investing in these centers. And then, again, the cliche, if you build it, people will come. And they're finding that actually is the truth.
Well, and being involved in that kind of movement is similar to being involved in any kind of artistic movement. I mean, if you are involved in putting on a show or a play or a concert, it's got to be kind of similar sense of empowerment and pride when you are involved in renovating a theater.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And because, as Rose was alluding to, or actually said, they're literally getting their hands dirty and literally laying a brick and connecting themselves with previous generations. Other studies show that if you continually invest in a community, and especially in its infrastructure and its buildings, it shows that there's continued interest and excitement in that community. So if you have a 100-year-old building, and I'm getting into preservation now, but if you have a 100-year-old building and you're deciding that it's still worth investing in, that just shows that community has that extra strength and that durability.
We're talking about community arts this hour. With me, Maura Pilcher, director of the Grantwood Art Colony in Iowa City. And we'd love to hear from you about the organizations in your community that you feel really add something to the fabric of your community. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And throughout the rest of the hour, we're going to check in with some of these organizations around the state. And joining us now is Heather Johnson. She is executive director of the Octagon Center for the Arts in Ames. And the Octagon has been part of the Ames community for 50 years. In fact, they are having a big celebration of their 50th anniversary on Sunday, September 25th in downtown Ames. In full disclosure, IPR is a media sponsor of that event. Heather, hello.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for the invite.
Now, give me a thumbnail sketch of the Octagon Arts Center, 50 years old now, but what was the original mission?
Well, the Octagon, as you said, started in 1966, 50 years ago, and four women that started the organization, Veronica Rutenberg, Martha Benson, Priscilla Sage, and Janet Squires, they saw a need that there was no outlet for creative artistic experiences and aims. And so they came across this old octagonal shaped house built in the 1870s. And that's where it started its roots, and thus the namesake for the Octagon.
So over the years, what kinds of opportunities has the Octagon Center given to people in the community?
It definitely is. The mission is for education, for offering different workshop classes, seminars that people from the public could come in, learn about a technique, hands-on activity that they otherwise might not venture on their own to experience. We also offer art camps during the summer, and as well as artistic outlets for artists to exhibit as well as sell their works in our gallery shop as well.
What do you think has led to the success of this center? I mean, in lasting 50 years, that's a really significant accomplishment.
Yeah, I think over the years, one thing that's changed a lot is technology. And so without having the opportunities through support from community organizations and other grant opportunities to make sure that we can try our best to keep up with the trends that are changing. And so we've been trying to offer even classes on iPhone photography, digital design. So it's kind of being aware of what's going on in the community and the culture and the trends and trying to make changes to our curriculum and kind of seeing what people are wanting these days to offer for special workshops or programs.
Now, in a lot of communities, those kinds of classes are offered by the Parks and Rec Department. Why do you think a community, not just Ames, but other communities, why do you think it's valuable to have a dedicated center for the arts?
I think we probably have the opportunity to switch over curriculum pretty quickly. And also, we have a lot of contacts with local other art organizations that we partner with. So we know, like, teachers that are, you know, their own artists that are professionals that can come in and offer a special program. So I think it really is about those connections that we have with, you know, hundreds of other artists and professionals in the area.
Now, earlier when we were talking about the artistic community in Maquoketa, we were talking about how, you know, when an artist is relatively unknown, they are extremely accessible to the community. And the Octagon has had that experience over the years, getting fairly well-known artists early in their career to be involved, right?
Absolutely. We were very fortunate. Back in 73, the Octagon did this symposium on technology and different art forms. And one of our guests was Dale Chihuly, who is now a world-renowned artist. His pieces, you know, go for millions and millions of dollars.
And he's a glass artist.
Yes, he's
artist.
Glass. A lot of people may not know who he is, but if they see his, you know, 20-foot glass sculpture, they would recognize his artwork. So we were very fortunate to be able to, you know, bring those artists in with that caliber.
It's so funny to think about a technology workshop in 1973.
Yeah.
Very, very different technology you were talking about then. Well, Heather, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you. And I want to also invite everybody out to the Art Festival this Sunday. If you want to come check out the Octagon, it's from 10 to 5 in downtown Ames.
All right, wonderful. Heather Johnson, Executive Director of the Octagon Center for the Arts in Ames. Again, they'll be celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, September 25th in downtown Ames. And Maura, back to you. In talking about this art center in Ames, a lot of communities have art centers. And as I mentioned, a lot of communities, the Parks and Rec Department tries to fill that need in the community. Why do you think it might be important to have something other than Parks and Rec, which is trying to fill so many roles in a community?
I think that's exactly it. They're trying to fill so many roles. And oftentimes there's competing interests. And it depends on where the money's going, too. And there's been a lot of focus on athletics in Iowa, especially over the past several decades. And I think there's this new look at our youth and saying, let's make sure we're investing in the arts, too. This is a huge untapped potential in our young people, and that we need to start investing in that. And so sometimes it takes private organizations that can really focus on that specifically and not get distracted by, you know, the soccer teams and the baseball leagues, et cetera, that they can just focus on making sure that those people, those young people especially, that want to get involved with art and their creative potential, that they have that opportunity, and that, you know, that it, and that the syllabus can change so quickly. I like that idea that, you know, that you can change the workshops depending on what the need in the community is.
You know, we've been exploring a lot of different aspects of artistic Iowa this week, and in some of the conversations we've been having about arts education, arts funding, one of the big problems that you see with arts education and arts funding is it's not the digital divide, but it's a socioeconomic divide. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, I live in Iowa City, which is a community with a lot of opportunities to explore the arts if you have enough money mm-hmm. to give your child or give yourself that opportunity. So as someone who works hard to bring this kind of experience around the state and to all individuals, what can you do to cross that socioeconomic divide and make sure that this isn't something that's just available to people of means?
Well, I think that's one of our programs we have in the Office of Outreach and Engagement is Arts Share. And it's been around for several decades, and it has reached 84 counties in Iowa. And its target audience is K-12 in underserved areas. It doesn't mean that we don't go to the bigger cities, but our target audience is trying to find those young people that aren't going to have opportunities to go to the orchestra, to go to dance classes. And we take our graduate students and our undergraduate students and even some of our faculty into these areas and show them what the potential is. And sometimes we actually get some students out of the process. But really, it's leadership's role, I think, to make sure that we're taking that barrier out of play.
Do you feel like that's actually being done, being accomplished, or is that one of those big barriers that continues to be a problem?
I think it's a barrier, but I think it's being addressed more so lately than it has been in the past. And if we look at communities as certain communities being underserved, the Iowa Arts Council even recognized that this is an issue. And last year they started a pilot grant called Arts Build Communities. This is exactly what we're talking about right now. And they offered two grants to communities, and they were to partner with Iowa State and or University of Iowa. And University of Iowa partnered with the Villages of Van Buren County and the Villages Folk School. And so what we did, well, what the Iowa Arts Council did is that they offered a large grant, and they could take on this artistic endeavor, whatever it might be. And in this case, they decided to create a sculpture that would celebrate the family farm. And so I think that there's a lot of attention, maybe more so now than before, but there's definitely that attention to making sure we are curating this talent here in the state.
We're talking about community arts this hour. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Rick is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Rick.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
I just wanted to kind of add in our organization, the Cedar Valley Acoustic Guitar Association. 15 years ago, my friend Rick Price and I were having a conversation about how boring it was to sit around in our basements and play guitar. And so we thought, well, let's get a group of people together and once a month and play together. And it became a real you've been mentioning the community aspects. And so now we have this great community of 70 or 80 musicians in Cedar Falls that all have this connection. A group of us get together once a month in kind of a Nashville song circle. And then we have also become a vibrant part of the community music scene through summer concerts. A lot of we have a partnership with Cedar Falls Community Main Street, and we provide music for events that they do. It's just become a real community of musicians as opposed to a lot of people isolated in their homes making music.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Amora, that does come back to what we were talking about, that it gives people an opportunity to come together.
Mm-hmm. And I love these grassroots opportunities, that nothing's too intimidating. That's the nice thing with the arts is that it can happen in a living room and it can happen in a large theater. And so these people decided, you know what, let's just gather more people.
Well, and during this day and age where we worry about people becoming more and more isolated, this is pushback to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, it's targeting people that might not otherwise go out for a sports team, you know, and they can do both. Absolutely. I did band and I was on track. But you can do both, but it gives us opportunities for people who might not find that camaraderie through athletics.
Do you feel like the loss of funding in schools for a lot of these arts programs creates an even stronger need in communities?
I don't want to be that hopeless. Because, again, I feel like there's a new energy. I mean, STEM is turning into STEAM. You know, we have these arts academies. I really feel like if you had asked me 5 years ago, I'd have a different answer. I'd be like, oh, yes, we're losing it all. But now I really feel strongly that since communities and community leadership is recognizing the value of culture in their communities, that they're not going to let it slip through the cracks in their education system. And also with all the alternative learning methods, they're again recognizing that it isn't, even though it might not have the exact outputs we're looking for, the outcomes will come out of having arts in schools.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Maura Pilcher, director of the Grantwood Art Colony in Iowa City. We're talking about community art initiatives, and coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about community theater and community bands. You are welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about community art initiatives. We've talked about community art centers and how community art center and all of the related things that grow around it can really transform a community or make it stronger. We'd love to hear from you. What have your experiences been? Is there an initiative or an organization in your community that you really think adds something to the quality of life there? Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Maura Pilcher is here with me. She's director of the Grantwood Art Colony in Iowa City and an expert on community art initiatives. And we want to talk now about community theater. And we're going to visit a community theater. It's almost 50 years old, 48 years old, the Webster City Community Theater, a very active community theater, and Loween Getter is here with us. Hello, Loween.
Good morning. How are you today, Charity?
Good. Thank you so much for being here.
A pleasure.
And as I mentioned, the Webster City Community Theater is almost 48 years old. This is a very active organization. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it started back in 1968 and pretty much just performed one show a year. And then it gradually developed to the point where today we do four or five shows per season and are quite active. Started out, as most community theaters do, with just being a roaming troupe that had a few costumes, a few set pieces, some lights, and performed wherever we could find a space, whether it was the high school auditorium or the Masonic Temple or the Country Club, the Elks Club. Wherever we could go was where we tried to put on a show.
And these days, where do you perform?
Well, back in 1992, a church in town became vacant because the congregation built a new building. And so we acquired that building. We did a capital campaign and started in April of 1992, and by July we had raised $135,000 in pledges and donations, and were able to purchase the building and began the transformation into a community theater. It's like the church was meant to have a second life just for us.
Nice. And how many people are involved with Webster City Community Theater these days?
Well, we are getting ready to celebrate our past season just Sunday night now, and we will recognize the efforts of about 100 people who were involved in the four shows and our summer camp this past season.
Wow. And, of course, that's not counting the people who come and watch your performances. Those are just
Correct.
The people involved in performing.
Those are such an important part of any community theater. You have to have people out in the audience who enjoy the efforts and talents that you have.
Now, Webster City is not a particularly large town, but about 8,000 people.
About 8,000. Mm-hmm.
Do you draw a lot of people from surrounding towns?
We do. We have people in our cast and in our crew who come from all over the county, as well as and contiguous counties. We pull from Wright County, Boone County, Webster County, Story County. Yeah, it's great to have that involvement. And we do keep track of our audience patrons. we ask them to sign up for a drawing at each of our shows, and then we take the data that we collect from those sign-up sheets and enter that into our database so that we know where our patrons are coming from and how loyal they are. And it's been very important to have that knowledge.
What do you think has made your organization so strong for so long?
Well, I think we're always pushing ourselves to do better. Once we had our own facility, it felt like we had a home. And we've had many people who have been involved come back and say, now I feel like I'm back home. And, you know, from one show to another, maybe they're only in one show a year, but then when they come back following season, it's like, now I'm home again for a little while. It's really created a family, a theater family.
Now,
and as far as getting patrons in, we've done a lot more advertising. We've had some wonderful grants from the local hotel motel tax that has allowed us to do some more widespread advertising.
Now, it's a big commitment to be in a show. That's a lot of hours. That's a lot of energy. And, okay, you know, you get some applause, you get some compliments, but it's not like you're going to make money or become, you know, a superstar. Why do it? What makes it such a special experience?
Well, I think it's a challenge that some people like to see if they can create that character, that they can learn the lines. That we can build a set. Not everybody wants to be on stage. Not everybody wants to memorize lines, but they contribute in so many other ways, and they want to see how can we make that work. A year ago summer, we did Spamalot, and, of course, you have to have the Trojan Rabbit. And we had a guy just figure it out in his head how to do it, and it was amazing what he did. So we're always challenging ourselves and pushing our creativity a little bit more. It's so exciting when we have new people come in and then they become part of our family too.
Well, Luween, thank you so much for talking with me.
Well, certainly. Glad to do it.
Luween Getter of the Webster City Community Theater, thriving for 48 years now, and also joining us on the line is somebody else whose life has been very influenced by community theater. Amanda Melita Green-Johnson is very active in the Spencer Community Theater, and it even played a role in her moving to the town. Hello, Amanda.
How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for talking with me today. And just give us a little thumbnail sketch of your story about thinking to about moving to Spencer.
Right. So I was a police officer, actually, in Ames, Iowa, and I took part in the Actors Community Theater there. Also with the university, when I was a student there, I was involved in Iowa State University Theater. I met someone. We got engaged, and he had strong ties to the Spencer area. However, it is a town of 11,000, and Ames is a lot bigger than that. They have a lot more going on, and so we really didn't think it was going to be something that we were going to be interested in. We drove up here, though, went to the theater. I walked through, and I told him that we could move. I told him that we would be able to move tomorrow if he wanted to.
Happened to stop by Spencer Community Theater. What did you see on that visit that made you think, oh, this is a town I could live in?
Well, first of all, the entrance, the lobby to that area, they just renovated the theater a few years ago, and it is grand and beautiful. And I'm used to playing in community theaters where, there's no backstage area. You have to essentially go outside in order to get any backstage space at all. It's a 250-plus seated theater, and it was just beautiful. And honestly, one of the biggest things for me was the executive director at the time, Connie Gokin, gave me a tour through the place, and she was just warm and witty, and I just knew when you move to a new community, the biggest challenge is to get support there and to develop roots.
Right, to find your people.
To find your people. And I knew this could be my tribe, and I could fit in here. And it has been an amazing fit. I just love that it brings together so many different walks of life. You have hairdressers, you have police officers, you have firefighters, teachers, people from all across the board partaking in this one common goal. And you would just work like heck to make it work. And then when it's all done, you have those memories and you have such a bond with these people. And that's, I think that's the amazing thing about community theater. So, yeah, it's, if you have a chance to check out Spencer's, it's a pretty and amazing, amazing place. So.
Oh, well, Amanda, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you so much, Charity.
Amanda Melita Green-Johnson, she lives in Spencer, Iowa, and part of her decision to move there was because of Spencer Community Theater. And we need to move on in just a moment, but Maura, I'd love to hear your reaction to that, because I'm sure so many community arts organizations would love to hear that someone said, I want to live here because this is so great.
Well, and I think that's interesting. We don't want to confuse the fact that the space is a grand sacred space when you walk into some of these spaces, and that makes you want to go into them. But also, I love that the person who was giving her the tour gave her that warm reception. And that's something that's very important. It's community building in the sense of within the community of the theater, that you get to meet these different people and you automatically have a tribe, as Amanda put it. But then it also builds a greater community when some of these plays and performances allow for greater conversations to take place. I mean, right here in Iowa City, we have Black and Blue taking place at Riverside Theater and talkbacks afterwards. And that's the other thing that these theater performances can provide, is that opportunity to discuss challenging issues. And if you see that going on in a community and this, all these people coming together and finding that commonality and that opportunity to reach out, that just that removes some of that intimidation of moving into a new place.
Well, I want to talk now about community bands, and we're going to travel way out west to Lamars, Iowa. Evidence shows that the Lamars Municipal Band was giving weekly concerts as early as 1907. They are still playing, and Sue Ashenfelter is with the Lamars Municipal Band. She's the secretary of the band and a flutist. Hello, Sue.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And tell me a little bit about the Lamars Municipal Band in 2016. What's your organization like now?
We have about 45 to 50 instrumentalists, and the band is composed of band directors, music teachers, college music majors, excellent high school instrumentalists. And then there's a group, and this is the group I'm in, the hobby instrumentalists.
The hobby instrumentalist. What does that mean?
That means that we're not music majors, but we're still playing our instruments and we're enjoying it.
And for you, what is it about being in the band that you enjoy so much?
Well, I'm part of the flute section, and we've had the same flutists in the band for years. And they're not only music buddies, they're friends. And it's just a lot of fun. And also, music is endlessly fascinating. It's amazing all the different combinations that can be made out of the sections in a band, from a single player to the entire band to a section here or a section there. So it's just a lot of fun.
Well, and this is also in Lamars. It's not a particularly large town, about 10,000 people now, probably bigger than it was in 1907, I think. But to have 45 to 50 members of a community band, that seems like a really large number of people who are involved. What's the age range of the people who get involved?
Anywhere from teenagers up into the 70s. And also, some of the players come from outside of Lamars, and this is pretty typical. I've been in three municipal bands in my lifetime, and there have been musicians who have come from towns other, you know, outside of where the municipal band is located. So that's pretty typical. So we have players who come from Remsen and Sioux City, occasionally from Vermilion, South Dakota, and just in the area.
How often do you perform now?
We play six concerts in the summer, generally on Wednesday evenings, unless it's the 4th of July, and then we'll play a 4th of July concert in the evening.
And what does the experience of making music with other people, what does that do for you?
It's just a lot of fun, and it's fun to see parts come together, to see a piece come together. After our first concert, then we get the music for the next concert, and so on through the season, so we get to practice. And sometimes the flute part or the piccolo part doesn't make much sense. But then when we get to rehearsal, oh, I see how this fits in, and I get to hear the entire piece, and that's a lot of fun.
And I mentioned, I mean, your band is over 100 years old. In thinking about that long heritage of the Mars Municipal Band, is that important to you too?
Oh, absolutely. I think music and the arts in general just adds so much to the quality of life. And with an hour band concert, people can come out to beautiful Foster Park. It's on Central Avenue in Lamar's, and for an hour or so, get away from their troubles, their concerns, and enjoy a good variety of music.
Well, Sue, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's Sue Ashenfelter. She is the secretary and the flutist in the Lamar's, or a flutist in the Lamar's Municipal Band, which has been going strong for over 100 years. And we've heard from so many people who want us to mention their community arts organizations. This is from Janet. She says, please be sure to mention the Iowa Art Quilters. This organization has been around for about 10 years and has members from all over the state. The group meets monthly in Grinnell and works on quilts with a central theme. Our current show's at the Ankeny Arts Center, and our latest challenge is portraits of buildings from four corners of the state. We heard from Ben, who says, I just want to mention Iowa City's wonderful multi-generational music group, the Family Folk Machine. We heard from Anjay, who says, since you're talking about community programs recently in Mount Vernon to support the arts, one of the school teachers organized a front porch fest in the southwest corner of town, which included eight homes hosting local and non-local musicians to raise funds for community arts. The porch fest is scheduled to be on October 2nd. And then from Ken in Cedar Falls, as a 44-year community theater veteran, I'm delighted that community theater is doing well in Webster City and Spencer. I'm hoping that you'll mention Waterloo Community Playhouse's 100th anniversary this year as well. And, you know, obviously, people take a tremendous amount of pride in the organizations that they are involved in. And, of course, we couldn't talk about every single organization all over the state. Just a little sampling today. But, Maura, that pride that you hear from people, I think that speaks volumes about the power of these organizations, too.
Yeah, I'm smiling. I just it's what gets you excited and wants to get involved. And the other thing that this is happening is I love the multi-generational. It came up from somebody who emailed in, as well as what Sue mentioned, you know, and that you have this, you have grandparents working with grandchildren in a way that they wouldn't be able to otherwise. And so then you have that familiar pride taking place. And then at the end of any performance, if you get an applause, that's something special. I mean, that is a rush you don't get in your daily job for most people. So that also just builds on that smile that it brings to your face, these opportunities.
So that sense of pride, that sense of empowerment and accomplishment, and also just the positivity
that you don't get from your daily work. Most people don't get that.
Maura Pilcher, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Maura Pilcher is director of the Grantwood Art Colony in Iowa City. We've been talking about community art initiatives. We couldn't get to every art theater organization around the state. Wilbur called in from Sioux City and wanted to plug the Sioux City Community Theater around since 1948. So I'm sorry we couldn't mention everyone's community art organization, but thank you so much for being a part of the program. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.